News Services Division of Akashwani presents Northeast Diary.
Good evening. Welcome to this edition of Northeast Diary. As we explore the northeastern part of India, it becomes increasingly intriguing to know about it in each episode. Let me share the excitement in store for you.
In Sikkim, the state-level celebration of the 75th Constitution Day, observed to commemorate the adoption of the Constitution of India, it was held in Chintan Bhavan, Gangtok, as part of the Samvidhan Ka Amrit Mahotsav on Tuesday. There's a report from Dili Ramdulal.
The program organized by the Government of Sikkim was attended by Mr. Raju Bosnet, Minister of Education, Sports and Youth Affairs, Law and Parliamentary Affairs Department as the chief guest. As part of this celebratory event, Law and Parliamentary Affairs Minister Mr. Raju Bosnet led the attendee in reading out the preamble to the Constitution of India. While extending his Constitution Day greeting to everyone, Mr. Raju Bosnet in his address highlighted the enduring importance of the Indian Constitution and stressed its role as the foundation of the world's largest democracy. He spoke about the preamble as a guiding light that reflects our collective aspiration for justice, liberty, equality and fraternity enriched in the Constitution. A special emphasis was laid on Article 371F, unique to Sikkim, which safeguards the state's distinct identity and cultural heritage. He further urged everyone to uphold the constitutional principle in their personal and professional life. Observing Constitutional Day, he said, was a reminder of our duties and an opportunity to connect with the spirit of democracy and national unity. An engaging talk on freedom of speech and expression in the digital age was presented by Dr. Chewang Dorji Lama, principal of Sikkim Government Law College, where he laid out the legal provision and their implication in the contemporary digital landscape.
I'm here not only to lecture on the freedom of speech and expression in the digital age. Actually, I would be laying out the provisions and the implications that has been there to be understood by you, by your own senses, because the Constitution itself is a liberal document. So when we talk about, as my topic says, that the freedom, I have to talk about the freedom of speech and expression in the digital age. When we talk about the freedom of speech and expression, or rather the term freedom, we have to talk about the Constitution a little bit. As earlier, as has been already said by the former speaker regarding the Constitution, how long it took, how it is lengthy, and all those kind of things. I just want to explain why it is so. First and foremost, we were under a foreign rule. There, as everybody knows, we were under the British for almost 200 years. And once freedom was achieved, or rather independence was achieved, we had unbound energy, unbound outlook upon what we had to have, what kind of law has to govern us. Actually, we were so much enthused so that we are free, how we can articulate our freedom for our own progress and development. That was the aim. But in that case, we will find a bit confusing that the day of independence, we were independent in the year 1947 and August 15 to be exact. But we say that the Constitution was adopted in the year 1949 and 26th of that year, 26th November of that year. Further, I want to again stress that actual Constitution came into force on the 26th day of January 1950. Why is that so? The thing is that without any fundamental rule or law, a country can be governed or a country cannot move forward. So there is a confusion saying that the independence was in 15 August 1947, whereas the Constitution came into existence, or rather into force, in the year 1950 on the Republic Day, that is the 26th of January. Within that period, we were already being governed by the Government of India Act 1935, And there itself, whatever was laid out in that act, which came into force in 1937, but not in the totality. It was just a mixed kind of thing, because you know that the struggle for independence was going on. There was another issue of partition already in place. So anyway, once 26 November 1949, we adopted the constitution and enforced a few provisions so that it was laying down the foundations for the constitution to be coming into force in full power. That was the 26th of January. On that day, we were totally free.
Dr. Achina Kundu, Vice Chancellor of Sikkim National Law University, delivered an insightful talk on evolution and essence of the Constitution, tracing its historical development and underlying its role as a living document guiding India's democratic journey.
After a thorough deliberation in the Constituent Assembly, the founding fathers of the Constitution created an independent judiciary with the power of judicial review as the custodian of the fundamental rights of the citizen. This particular characteristic, that is the independence of judiciary, plays a very significant role in determining the limits of power of the center and the states. Now, we've seen that, and we've read it out also in the preamble, that India is a secular socialist state. Now, what does that mean actually? The citizens of our country are free to follow any religion and they enjoy equal rights without any distinction of race, religion, caste, sex, or place of birth. The word secular was included in the preamble by the 42nd Amendment in 1976. Article 15, Clause 1 prohibits any discrimination based on religion, and Article 25, Clause 1 provides that subject to public order, morality, and health, and subject to some other provisions, all persons in India are equally entitled to freedom of conscience and the right freely to profess, practice, and propagate religion. Now, what does a socialist state actually mean? The principal aim of India as a socialist state is to eliminate inequality. To eliminate inequality in income and status and standards of life. The basic framework of socialism is to provide a decent standard of life, especially to the working class, and especially to provide security.
In Nagaland, the serene landscapes of Wokha and rich biodiversity faces a growing challenge, especially the human-elephant conflict. Wokha, with a geographical area of just 1,628 square kilometers, is home to an estimated 160 to 180 elephants, according to the 2017 census. This represents a significant portion of Nagaland's elephant population, which totals 446. For years, the people of Wokha and the elephants that reside in its forest have struggled to coexist. With no effective solution in sight, the conflict continues to threaten both livelihood and wildlife. We have more reports from Nagaland correspondent.
For the villages under Wokha, the conflict is devastating. From paddy fields to rubber plantations, sugarcane to vegetables, farmers are facing significant losses as elephants consume their crops. For the community, elephants have always been an issue, but for the past 3 to 4 years, the issue has been escalating. VDP Secretary of Changka Village, Sensadi Antan, shared more on this.
Human-elephant conflict has been a major threat for the people of Changka and other surrounding villages. It describes negative interaction between human and wild elephants. Human-elephant conflict can take the toll both on human life and properties as well as elephants' population. Human-elephant conflict is also a major conservation concern in elephant habitat areas like Changka. It remains pervasive as the majority of existing strategies are driven by site-specific factors that only offer short-term solution. While mitigation strategies frequently transfer conflict risks from one place to another, long-term resolution of human-elephant conflict and promotion of peaceful coexistence requires a simultaneous focusing of management effort on site-specific considerations as well as the formulation and application of strategic plans at a landscape level that directly address underlying anthropogenic drivers and the spatio-temporal variation. The most common forms of human-elephant conflicts are crop raiding, property destruction, or simply people getting too close to elephant and triggering defensive behaviors that may lead to injury or death of human and wild elephant as well. These conflicts endanger not only people's safety and elephant survival, but also the health of ecosystem. In a village like Changka, we face this conflict at least twice or thrice a year, and this cripple agricultural activities of the people, which can have grave repercussions in the long run.
Despite the challenges faced, the State Forest Department has initiated steps to address the crisis, including a state action plan that has been drafted and submitted for approval. The plan aims to provide an amicable solution for both humans and elephants, relying heavily on the community cooperation. The human-elephant conflict in Woka highlights the balance needed to coexist with wildlife. While conservation efforts are underway, the situation also remains challenging. As both sides struggle for survival, it is clear that collaboration, innovative solutions, and a deeper understanding of the shared environment are crucial to resolving the crisis.
Meghalaya State Commission for Women, MSCW, on Monday launched 16-day activism against violence meted out to women. Here is a report.
First thing I would like to say is that violence is everywhere. It's our reality. And through social media, also we can see and hear about the violence that exists, whether it's verbal, physical, or sexual. And this goes not just for women, I'm saying, just for children as well as even for young men and adults also. So we as a commission are also remembering this day. These are markers. These are days when we want to bring out, raise our voice, because this is something that is nothing new. It's part of a historical process where women have been raising their voice against violence, and this is the day that we remember, the 25th of November, as elimination of violence against women. And it has come through a lot of process and so on. But what we want to say to the public is that to be aware, to know that this is your right to have a voice, and to be sensitive, to observe wherever violence exists and appears, you know, in various forms. It might be very subtle, but then for every woman, child, man, whichever, if you see any kind of a suspicion of violence or violence taking place in any form, to come out. Do not hide. You know, raise your voice. Go to the people who can help. For example, the 181 helpline is there. Then the One Stop Center is there. The commission is there. Police are there. Rangbashnongs are there. Everywhere you have people who are willing to help. This is not your fight alone. And we ask all the women who are bruised and broken and battered, you know, that there are people today who are willing to help you. So please come out and do not just remain silent. We have seen how silence can create a cycle of abuse, and it persists. You might even lose your life or your limb or something else, you know. So this is a very dangerous place to be, to keep quiet, to be silent. So this, we hope, will raise awareness, and we're just thankful to the media also who's spreading this kind of awareness everywhere. So the people who can't reach us in this place where we're having the roadshow, we hope to be able to do something similar like this in the coming year and the coming months. But we are thankful to the media for giving us that, you know, that larger reach to the public. Darkness is everywhere. So we hope that the light, especially now we're relying on social media and other means by word of mouth and, you know, whatever. We have these also. We'll spread it around, you know. And we hope that it will reach every corner of our state. in the rural areas, in Jayanti Hills and Garo Hills, and we will do our best to make this a campaign that doesn't stop at 16 days, but will be an ongoing kind of activism or kind of movement also, if you can say that. All I can say is that, as you mentioned, there are many unreported cases, but then the commission is working on a little bit of data collection. We want to be reliable when we say something, because without data, we cannot really say something specific. So at this moment, we would leave it for a future time, to bring up with the specifics.
With crimes against women showing no signs of abating, the campaign aims to serve as a critical platform to demand justice, push for legal reforms, and foster a safer environment for women in Meghalaya. This is Lamphrang Nongspong for Northeast Diary from AIR News Long.
An event was organized in the JNU campus by the Northeast Students Forum in collaboration with the Ladakh Students Forum. It was entitled The Northeast Confluence 2024. The rich culture and vibrance came alive when the artists performed. A report on the event for the listeners of Northeast Diary.
Hello everyone, this is Nokentamla, the convener of the Northeast Students Forum, JNU. Before I dive into Confluence 2024, I would like to share a small history of Confluence at the JNU campus. Confluence is an annual cultural celebration of the Northeast student community at JNU. It is a long-standing tradition of the Northeast student community at the campus to promote cultural representation as well as form bonds among the student community. Within the student community at JNU, it is known for its cultural performances and cultural display, and also for its culinary delicacies from the Northeast states. This year, Confluence 2024 was organized by the Northeast Students Forum and Ladakh Students Forum. Ladakh Students Forum had collaborated with the Northeast Students Forum for organizing Confluence in the previous years as well. The theme of the Confluence 2024 was Kaleidoscope of Colors, signifying the diversity of culture that comes together to form wonderful, memorable moments and form bonds within the student community at JNU. The venue of the Confluence 2024 was at the KC Open Air Theatre, JNU. The chief guest of the cultural program was Mousumi Chakraborty, ex-director general of Akashwani, and the guest of honor was Dr. Napisabit Kharsadi, assistant professor psychology, National Forensic Sciences Institute. Before the program began, the anchors led a one-minute silence for the people of Manipur and the state. This was followed by my welcome speech introducing the Confluence history and welcoming all attendees. One of the most heartfelt moments of the program was the theme song performance, True Colors, by Cindy Lauper, sung by a diverse group of students from all the participating states. This song symbolized the unity and vibrant diversity of Northeast India and Ladakh, setting the perfect tone for the rest of the event. After the performance, we proceeded with the felicitation of the chief guests and guest of honor, expressing our gratitude for their invaluable presence. The chief guest then delivered an inspiring speech emphasizing the importance of cultural harmony and the richness of Northeast India and Ladakh.
Yeah.
The cultural showcase began with the first performance from Ladakh. Young Sid and group performed a traditional folk dance known as the Jabro. The traditional folk dance, marked by melodic songs and synchronized movements, represented Ladakh's nomadic traditions. Nagaland's performance featured a spiritual folk song, Ohio, which celebrated faith and love and peace. Students from Arunachal Pradesh presented a fusion of Arunachal's vibrant tribes who have lived together in peace and harmony for ages, respecting and loving each other's traditions and cultures. The dance was presented by our four female students representing harmonious livelihood in the city. The guest of honor, Dr. Nafisabed Karsadi, then addressed the gathering, appreciating the Northeast Students Forum and Ladakh Students Forum for collaboratively organizing the cultural event. Mizoram brought heartfelt musical performances, including When You Go Home, a poignant tribute to soldiers, and Zoram Ngaila, a nostalgic song that resonated deeply with students far from home. Assam mesmerized us with a medley of traditional dances, Diwa tribe dance, Sonowal Kacharai dance, Mixing dance, Bodo dance, and Bihu dance. Finally, Meghalaya presented Shi Yi Ka Kwai Dokha, a humorous yet poignant song about the struggles of Khasi fishermen. One of the most anticipated segments of the evening was the attire show, where students proudly displayed traditional clothing from the Northeast and Ladakh. The vibrant colors, intricate designs, and stories behind each piece made it an unforgettable experience. As the formal program came to an end, the evening transitioned into a delightful informal session with more musical performances from the Northeast student community and the Ladakh student community. To conclude, the co-convener, Pranjit Gogoi, delivered a vote of thanks, expressing our heartfelt appreciation to everyone who contributed to the event's success. Meanwhile, food stalls run by Ladakh, Assam, and Arunachal Pradesh offered a range of traditional snacks and drinks. For dinner, attendees enjoyed a feast of Northeastern delicacies. All the traditional delicacies in the menu were prepared by students from the participating states. Vegetarian options in the menu included solpa, sivachur, and aloo pitika, while non-vegetarian menu included pork with fermented bamboo shoot, masur tenga, and tohan mospeng. Along with the dishes, a common option for both the menu included rice, lafito, braisi, and fatingchu. Attendees bonded over traditional delicacies from the northeast and Ladakh, sharing stories and laughter in a warm celebratory atmosphere. Reflecting on Confluence 2024, I am immensely proud of the teamwork and dedication of the Northeast Students Forum and Ladakh Students Forum. This event was more than a showcase of culture. It was a bridge that connected people, fostering understanding and mutual respect.
You just heard a medley of the musical program that was held in JNU. So friends, with this we come to the end of this program. See you next week, same day, same time. Till then, goodbye and take care.